Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and this is the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants Monthly Podcast Interview. On this program, we feature a variety of attorneys and experts in many areas of health law, litigation, and the regulation of healthcare professionals. Today's podcast interview with Donna Weinstock focuses on current trends and topics in medical practice management. In the next 30 minutes, Donna will talk to us about her approach to running a business and healthcare practice and offer examples of opportunities in improving our operations, patient service, and employee retention. Today's program is titled Medical Office Management Tips with Donna Weinstock. Topics that we'll cover on our 30-minute interview today include why medical offices need policy manuals, as well as how to divide and delegate tasks, of course, making smart choices when recruiting employees, also when it makes sense to use outsourced solutions. Of course, we'll also talk about some of the services provided by Office Management Solution, whose Donna Weinstock is here today to talk to us. Donna is the president of Office Management Solution, and she spent over 30 years in healthcare, first working in physician offices as a biller and receptionist, and later as a practice manager. This has allowed her to truly understand the workings and day-to-day operations of healthcare practices, which now allows her to help clients and physician practices become more efficient and therefore more profitable. Donna is also a speaker and writes for healthcare magazines. As a short disclaimer, this is a general information program. Any advice shared on the show does not constitute legal advice. Communication with attorneys and guests on our program do not give rise to professional relationships, and if you have specific questions about any of our content on today's program, you should call the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants and make an appointment to speak to someone by dialing area code 773-631-4580. Again, that's 773-631-4580. All rights to this broadcast are reserved, and it's time to say good afternoon to Ms. Donna Weinstock.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it. And I appreciate having me on today.
Well, Donna, I appreciate you carving out a little bit of your time to talk to us about what it is you do and how healthcare professionals can take some notes on honing into ways they can improve their practices to really benefit, the opportunities to improve operations, patient service, and employee retention, also to reduce exposure to liability in certain instances and cases that could come up. If you could just start by telling us a little bit about your background, as I touched on, and how you felt you had a passion in deciding that medical practice management was really where one wanted to focus your career.
Well, the truth is, Nick, I fell into it by accident, and I've now spent my entire career working in healthcare, and I've really come to be passionate about the practices and what they want to accomplish. The day-to-day operations have changed, the way people think about healthcare, the way patients think about their healthcare has changed and evolved over the past 30 years. And it's really interesting to watch everything develop and for patients to become more savvy.
You know, another thing, too, is the challenges out there in keeping up with technology is something that certainly can change the landscape and how the healthcare profession is perceived, not only from the patient, but also from the patient service provider. Telemedicine, for example, has opened up a lot of opportunities for people, and along with that have come some ethical questions, and the book has yet to be written on a lot of issues as technology and things going on in the world of law and politics and everything else continues to shape healthcare. So it would seem to me that the most important thing to running a practice is being flexible.
It is, and the challenges really have gotten more difficult over the past 20, 30 years. It's not just the technology, it's the insurance companies, it's the rules and regulations that the practices have to live by, whether it's something like HIPAA for confidentiality, or whether it's remembering what we're doing, how we bill, what's compensated, what's not. So much has changed over the years that it is a very challenging career for everyone to be in at this point.
Absolutely. And as you point out something about billing, that is certainly a focus when we are speaking in terms of our healthcare professionals and their licensing and liability concerns with Mr. Fabio's firm, often talking about cases where medical fraud, medical billing fraud, is something that the Strike Task Force and many others are cracking down on and looking for. And for those who are hospital administrators with employees doing their due diligence to make sure that everyone is on the up and up, there are always challenges in keeping track of who's doing what and having systems that if there is a break in the chain, so to speak, that can be detected and, you know, addressed before it gets to be a bigger problem. That's a topic that we hear a lot about, and that sort of translates into what are we going to do as an administrator to have policy manuals to and policy procedures and protocols to sort of address these things. So if we could segue into that, if you could touch a little bit upon that and how policy manuals are something that we can use to fortify our practices.
Absolutely. Policy manuals give the staff written rules and regulations regarding the practice. Practices, when they hire new employees, want them to meet certain expectations. But in order to know what those expectations are, they need to be told. Employees need to know what they're expected to do and how they're supposed to act. And for that reason, it's important to have a policy manual, because it not only tells you what the expectation is with regards to basic information about the practice, what the expectations are for the employee themselves, but it also gives them opportunities to know what the consequences are if they happen not to follow those. And so it's really important to have a policy manual that is very intricate, that allows the practice to talk about the different aspects so that they are able to touch on these specific things, and it allows the employees to know what their expectations are. And so whether you're talking about something specific about whether, for example, the hours of the office and when office hours are and how to answer the phone, I mean, those are like basic, but you also want to be much more specific, talking about dress codes, social media, different things, phone etiquette, exactly what's expected and what they can and can't do in these different aspects.
In that as well, it seems it may be an opportunity in a policy manual to identify things that can come up. Again, in addition to consequences, the results of actions that employees may feel are appropriate when, for example, there's a termination and there's a violation of a dress code. And it brings to my mind a case that was in the media recently involving a restaurant. I mean, we're moving away from healthcare, but it was a restaurant that had a dress code policy prohibiting neck tattoos. And in the social media comments, now, of course, a restaurant is a different deal we're talking about, but a lot of the comments on social media were people talking about discrimination. And, you know, I think of the dress code policy and, you know, whether permissible it is to have tattoos showing. It may be an opportunity in that policy manual to address what is discrimination, what is not discrimination, and even include sort of a rundown of what people should know about federal laws, in addition to what the state requires, is posted on the boards in the lunchroom. So I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that, which people have used that policy manual to address those types of things directly.
You know, I think one of the issues that I see when you're describing that is you're talking about the patrons weren't allowed, you know, that somebody was asked to leave because if they had a neck tattoo on. I think it's more difficult, whether it's a patron or a patient, I think it's more difficult it's much more difficult to say whether or not a patient can come in with a tattoo as opposed to what's expected by the employees themselves. So I think
Absolutely.
That it's more difficult. You need to be able to say in the policy manual that as an employee, you can't, you know, you may not have tattoo showing. They can do that for a restaurant. But to be able to say to a patron, you can't come in here because you have a tattoo, I think that's
right.
a different situation. That opens you up to much more liability. Whereas as an employee, and as an employer, you're able to say that.
And what was it, I guess, you know, also what I'm thinking of too is identifying to the employee what types of things may be discrimination, whatnot. You know, with the policy stating you are not allowed to have visible tattoos. Okay, why? And that you may have a statement in there that talks about it's, you know, this is a meeting of the minds between the offer, you know, the employer and the employee as the offer of employment goes, and these are the terms, and that that is not something that usually is considered discrimination. So I'm sort of thinking of cutting it off at the pass by having the policy further, explain things where, you know, that's an area where I just see as in legal that lawyers may help with that policy too. So just so that the employees, when they're accepting the terms of an employment in the policy manual, that they know what's going on.
I absolutely agree with you, and I always recommend when writing a policy manual that they have them reviewed by legal, by their attorney, to make sure that there isn't potential liability and that they won't open themselves up to any kind of liability suits. But I think that as an employer, for the most part, you do have a right to say what an employee can and can't do or what they can and can't wear, and then it's up to the employee to make a decision if that's a place that they want to work. But I think that once the policy is written, it's a different issue if the employee now doesn't follow that policy, but they have a right to choose whether they want to work for a company with that policy.
Absolutely. I know that, when we talk about employment and states that are at-will employment and not here to give advice, but that Illinois may be an at-will employment state, you can hire and fire at will. However, employment contracts are something that come into play often where, in the event of a termination, it is spelled out what would happen, what the expectations are, rights and duties and consequences of things. How common is it within healthcare profession to find medical office managers on contracts, on employee contracts that are referred to in the policy manuals and control things from a contract point of view?
I think contracts are becoming much more popular, and you see them much more often. And I think it's important to include in the policy manuals employee contracts or what the expectations are, so that both the employer and the employee know exactly what the expectation is and what happens if they don't meet the policies that have been set, what happens if they're terminated, what happens if they choose to leave, and that way everybody knows exactly up front what's going on. I think that Illinois is an at-will state, so theoretically they can terminate an employee at any time, but that doesn't mean that the employee can't go out and try to get unemployment or can't try to sue for some kind of discrimination. So I think that there's a really fine line between there's a fine line between what the law says and what the expectation is an employee can do from that standpoint. So I think that when you spell it out in a policy manual, then there's no question. Here's your policy manual. Read it. If you keep it at your desk, and if you don't follow it, and then there's some consequences to that. But at least at the end of the day, you can say to that employee, look at page 5 or look at page 10. You didn't follow the rules.
Absolutely. And when it's clearly stated, it avoids, we're doing away with ambiguity. There's no room for argument when it says you are not allowed to be on Facebook at your desk, or you may be allowed. What about cell phone use? What about videos? Can you take a selfie at your desk? Are you in a hospital setting where there are HIPAA concerns that, you know, phones are absolutely prohibited? All these types of things are things employees might not really even think about, but good topics, though.
A really good topic and a really good example of that, too, is, you know, you want to take a picture. First of all, I think when you do have a social media policy, it needs to state whether or not you can mention your work or not and what you can mention, because you have to be really, really careful and what you show on social media. And I think one of the biggest issues now is people take pictures at work and they put it on social media. But what happens is that if somebody blows up that picture in the background, there's a chart or a file, you've just broken HIPAA. So you have to be really specific what an employee can and can't do, but you also have to be specific not just about what they say, but a picture that they might put on.
Absolutely. I mean, and as we start seeing things that happen in the world, we're able to adopt and change our policy manuals and things as we go along. Let's move out of order a little bit. We're going to talk about dividing and delegating tasks as a management function. But since we're on the topic of employees, let's talk a little bit about making smart recruiting decisions when recruiting employees.
I think it's really important to want to find people that have the same values as your practice, that believe the same way, that feel the same way about patient care, about patient satisfaction, customer service. You want employees that are going to go the extra mile and that really take pride in their work. You want an employee that's going to treat this more than just a job, more than just a 9-to-5, I've got to come in and get a paycheck. You want them to care about your patients. And I think when they do, then you've made a really good, smart choice. And I think one of the best ways to do that is in an interview process, not just to say yes and no questions, but to ask questions that are open-ended. Instead of saying, are you always on time? Well, what are they going to say? They're going to say, yes, I'm always on time. But rather than that, ask an open-ended question, tell me about a time when, or give me an example when you had this happen to you. And that allows you to really learn more about the candidate and determine whether or not they will have the same mission as you and the same values as your practice.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about office and outsourcing solutions in a little bit in further detail. But with respect to employee recruitment and hiring, sometimes there's an opportunity to do all of those functions from within administratively, and other times it may make sense to use an outsourced employment, temporary to permanent or contract labor placement agency. Can you talk a little bit about some different scenarios where you've seen people making those types of challenging decisions?
I think that you will have to look at it both from a cost-effective standpoint as well as what resources you have available to you. If a practice has the potential to get out the word and find really good candidates on their own, then they don't need to engage in a recruitment agency. But if they're limited in their resources, they don't have the proper personnel to do the first interviews, they don't have that kind of access to the candidates that they're looking for, then I think it's really important and that it could be money well spent, because while somebody else is doing that first round of interviews and posting those jobs, your staff might be doing a lot more valuable things within the office. So I think you have to look at it where your business is located. Do you have access to the kinds of candidates you're looking for, and which way is more cost effective for you?
Absolutely. You know, it makes me think about the policy manual back when we're talking about certain types of positions, for example, medical data entry, billing and coding, and EMR management, when we may have a volume of people and using an outsourced solution is easier when everything is in the policy manual and that contract or temporary employee or intern can easily refer to that. It can reduce your time for training and when you have turnover in certain positions too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that the way a candidate comes in on their first interview is really a good, has the potential to be a good indicator on how they feel about this job. If they come in wearing jeans and a casual shirt as opposed to dressing more business casual, I think it says something about that person. And is that the kind of person that, you know, is that the way they're going to dress in your office? Is that the kind of person you want? And you want to look at whether they're timely, what they're doing. But I think that if those things are in a policy manual, then it controls what you're seeing at a first interview or once that candidate gets to your office to be interviewed.
Absolutely. And before we move on to our next topic, let's just touch lightly on some of the challenges facing medical and healthcare professionals in hiring and recruiting when it comes to being sensitive or aware of differences within age groups between baby boomers on down to millennials. People are sometimes challenged with communication levels, expectations, and just kind of that fit that goes along with hiring.
You know what? That has become a really significant issue in the workplace because I think the values have changed over the years and the commitment. Years ago, people worked 20, 30, 40 years for the same company. You don't see that today. There isn't the same loyalty that there was many years ago. And I think that the younger generation tends, and that's whether it's good or bad is a different issue, but they tend to move around more an older generation might have put up with. And so I think it's really important to make sure that the culture of your practice lends itself to good communication between your employees. And
well,
it shouldn't matter whether you have somebody.
It
shouldn't matter if you have somebody who's an older person working with a younger person. You really need to promote good communication.
Absolutely. You know, there may be opportunities, too, where you recognize that, you know, a certain person might not have the expectation of staying on forever as a career with that organization. However, there may be things to learn from, or there may be opportunities for that individual to provide good service and really be a good contributor to an organization, you know, albeit knowing that they may not have the intention of being there forever. So, you know, there's opportunities to be flexible and opportunity. And I always believe, too, with people who are right out of school, I want to know what they're teaching. I want to know what types of things are happening. What are the styles? You know, how can we – we're always adapting and we're always changing. So I think turning a blind eye to just the differences among different age groups, you know, is a disservice to ourselves, and it's a good thing. If we can move on a little bit to delegating tasks. So now we're in the function of patient service and care. We have also, and not only that, but billing and office and administrative, we have a lot of different tasks and how to get everything done and how to prioritize.
Well, I think you have to have your there's a couple issues here. And the first one is you want to make sure that your managers and your supervisors are good at delegating because they can't possibly do everything. It's just too much for one person to do. So they really need to be able to find the right people for the right tasks. If somebody's doing data entry, you want them to be able to sit still for long periods of time. If they're kind of hyper and they can't sit still, they're better at a front desk that's moving and multitasking as opposed to sitting or trying to sit for long periods of time. So I think it's important to look, one, at what the people can do, but you also want to make sure that you divide your tasks up from a safety standpoint. You want to protect your practice from fraud, as you mentioned earlier. You know, I truly believe that most employees are honest, but you get those few that aren't. And by separating and delegating the tasks you know, to different people, you're protecting yourself. When you look at the tasks that have to do with the financial aspects, for example, you know, you open the mail, you post the payments, you make the deposits, you run the reports, you do the write-offs, you do your monthly bank statement. Those are all financial tasks. You don't necessarily, you really don't want one person to do all of that. You want to do that as much as possible, depending on the size of your office, to divide that up, to protect your practice, to be able to know that there are checks and balances to prevent fraud or abuse or any kind of embezzlement, which nowadays you're seeing more of.
Yeah, I mean, important things to think of. Not only that, also, you know, with to the extent that they are in direct healthcare work and serving the patients, medical medicines and diversion of narcotics is also a big thing that scares a lot of people who are ultimately, you know, the liability chain goes up, 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 up.
Exactly, exactly. There's so many potential liabilities. Nowadays, it's a little easier with the narcotics, with e-scribing and the way that you have to have duplicate copies or triplicate copies of your prescriptions. People are doing more online, whereas years ago, you would put, you know, frequently you would walk into an exam room and there would be a prescription pad right in the drawer. Well, anybody can take that and forge a signature.
And forging a signature can't be that difficult. You just scribble sometimes, right?
That's about it. And, you know, the pharmacy, if it's one that's not familiar with this particular doctor and doesn't see it all the time, but I think that there are more safety measures in place now. And I think that practices, both physicians and practice managers, have become more aware of this and really do go out of their way to protect the practice from potential dangers.
Absolutely. Now, when we look at outsourcing, as we started to touch upon earlier, talking about employee recruitment, outsourcing is something that at least I perceived at some point in time when in our country, a lot of the jobs that were particularly manufacturing and other, you know, sectors, when there are dips, it seems, in some sectors, healthcare and other sectors that are growing is a place where a lot of people look for the opportunities. And one of those opportunities is the outsourcing industry. And at one point, there are people saying that we should outsource just basically everything to you know, wherever. And that is, I think some people have found that that's not always the most effective thing, and what looked like a really good idea didn't turn out to be so great in practice as people started seeing the unexpected consequences sometimes of too much outsourcing, where there are certain things that you might want to keep under your roof.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think each practice has to look at themselves individually and look at the potential things that they could outsource versus what they should keep in. And I think it depends when a practice isn't able to meet the needs that they have and it's not cost effective, then they want to outsource. But it might be worth hiring somebody new to be able to do some of those to keep it in. And I know that when I think of outsourcing, some of the topics that I think of, you know, aspects is, first of all, employee benefits and payroll, whether or not it's worth it to have a payroll service that can also offer you some benefits. Sometimes you're better off having it in. Sometimes you're better off outsourcing it. Billing services is another area. Is it worth it to have one or two employees in there doing your collections? Will they be higher? Will you have better responses? Or are you better off if you're not able to keep the staff that you need, or you're a really small office, are you better off outsourcing billing? IT is another one that not all practices can afford to have an IT person on site or within their, you know, within their practice, unless they're large enough to be able to support it. So sometimes it's worth it to outsource those things, and sometimes not. And I think that you have to look at the individual practice and what it's worth and whether or not it makes sense to bring it internally into the practice.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I would also add in there is insurance policies, because I always think about liability coverage and making sure that we read those policies to make sure that we're the thing I always think about in a law firm I worked at many years ago, the policy required any outgoing mail that it be recorded to whom the mail was going and what was going out, recorded in redundant places. So we had it on the computer, and then we had another handwritten binder in case it went down. So, you know, we always want to think about our insurance, of course.
Oh, absolutely, insurance. I mean, that's a major one. And then you have some of the smaller things that you may or may not want to outsource, marketing your practice, finding out, you know, making sure that you're HIPAA compliant, hiring companies to help you with that. I mean, I think you have to look at the individual aspects and tasks that need to go from the from the practice and make those decisions. But you do want to make sure that you're protecting your practice and keeping it safe.
Right. Now, Donna, your work as a consultant with Office Management Solution may help people answer those insofar as they can work with Office Management Solution to audit and review how things are going and what type of things you can offer as services and answers as they help prepare policy manuals, consider how they're doing the delegation of tasks, how they're recruiting and outsourcing. So tell us a little bit more about how you work, who's a good person that you work with, how you work with them, and what that looks like.
Well, I work with practices to improve processes. We want to look at what they're doing within the office. Most often, I like to work with the physician because I think that's where the buck really stops. It's their practice. Sometimes practice managers find me, they think that they're in conflict with what I do because they think that I'm out to get them. And the truth is I'm not. Very often I'm their ally, and I can advocate for what they need within the office if what they need is reasonable. So I usually work either with a practice manager or with a physician. We look at the different prospects. We make a decision whether we're looking at the whole office or just a, you know, let's say the front desk area or the scheduling. We look at what's going on day to day and make determinations whether or not we can try something different that might make the office more efficient. And by being more efficient, seeing more patients, that allows the profit and revenue to increase. I also write policy manuals. And I do always, as we talked about earlier, I do always recommend that at the end that they do have their attorney review it for any potential liability, because I am not an attorney, nor can I guarantee that from a liability standpoint, but I think that I rarely find anything in a policy manual that I've written that's really questionable. So that's not been an issue, but I do, you know, ask that practices have them reviewed. But I do write policy manuals. I do write for magazines and journals, and sometimes I run workshops and facilitate workshops where I bring in several practice managers and speakers come in, and it allows us to network and to allow the practice managers to gain more information. And I think that the more information that we get and the more we share, the better we are at doing our jobs. And as a previous practice manager, I feel like I understand where they're coming from.
And that's very valuable, especially because one who would be a consultant to all sorts of different industries and practices may have a lot of more general things, and having that specific knowledge and expertise and background is certainly an asset. When you work with organizations, I'm guessing that this can be something where it's an ongoing, as needed, counsel, as well as, you know, setting up projects of reviewing and giving advice on things. And then I suppose there's cleanup. So it seems like there's probably ongoing relationships you would have. Is that right?
There's often ongoing. I try to work it as a project. And we go for X number until this project is completed. You know, this is what we're going to do. And then there's like a maintenance period, you know, which allows them X number of calls or visits or something to follow up to be able to make sure we're on track. You know, there's nothing worse than a consultant that comes in and says, this is what you should do, walks away, and then that's the end of the day. But I really like to hands-on help them to make sure that what we tried is working, because if it's not working, we need to try something else. And so I do like the ongoing relationships that allow us to make sure that what they're doing continues to work.
Well, and I also see the benefit, especially with a solo or small practice, where the professional may believe that how they've conceived of things is how it will work best. And then when we put things in practice, sometimes we can see areas where, oh, you know, we forgot about, you know, maybe this might work better, and we can tweak things and change things as we see how we work best with others in our practice, as well as the ongoing changes in the world in which they practice. So it seems like that flexibility and that ongoing thing is a good thing. So you probably do this for companies of all sizes, from small to large?
I do it from small to large. I outsource what I am not able to do, because I have a group of professionals that I also refer to. You know, if I walk into a practice and I find that I really think they either need better legal counsel or different legal counsel or legal counsel to begin with, then I would call in one of my professionals, somebody including Mike Favia, and depending on what the needs were, if I feel like they need something else that I can't give them, then I will offer to bring in an IT person or somebody else who has that expertise. And that's what can make us valuable, because we can bring in a whole network of people to truly help them with their practice.
And so in many aspects like that, you're a connector.
Correct.
Absolutely.
I try to be, and I offer a different viewpoint to the practices. And sometimes that's, you know, then you say, well, here's your viewpoint, here's mine. What do you think? Can we make it work? What would make it work better?
Absolutely. And I suppose in that process, it's really asking the right questions, because when you walk in, you may not know answers to any of those questions, but by asking the questions and having someone answer them causes them to really think about things. How would you describe it? And, you know, in my world, it's marketing and branding of law firms. To ask an attorney or law firm, what really is your brand of your practice, is a question that many folks have not been asked before. So it really does seem to take a village with professional management and everything that goes along with it.
A lot of things takes a village, and especially healthcare now, because between the government and the CMS and the insurance companies and everybody else, every week there's a new rule and regulation, and some go into effect and some get postponed, and some, you know, there's so many things that change so rapidly that it's almost impossible for one person to know everything and to keep up on everything. And so it really helps when you have that opportunity to have a village help you.
Well, absolutely. And it would seem to me that it would reduce anxiety and fear to a professional, where I've heard people who've been dissuaded from healthcare as a profession because of the concern of things changing so rapidly. And especially if you're in a larger metropolitan area, their expectations of you from the standard and duties of care in practice is that of your competitor down the street, as opposed to someone living downstate in a smaller rural community that might have access to the research hospitals and everything else. So there, you know, for a lot of folks, there are a lot of concerns, and I'm just glad, Donna, that there are people like you that are out there with Office Management Solution and your team who can help people in healthcare practice really make sure that all their T's are dotted and I's are crossed. So, Donna, is there a best way that people can get in touch with you if they want to continue on this dialogue and have some questions on how you might be able to work with them to streamline their medical office management?
Probably the best way to start is through email, and that would be Donna, D-O-N-N-A, at, and all spelled out, Office Management Solution, and it's a singular solution, officemanagementsolution.com. My phone number, if you want, is 847-205-9797. If they did hear it from the podcast and you want it, I almost say in the subject matter to put podcast, or I heard your podcast, because then I know where they're from. I know it's a legitimate email coming in, because nowadays you never really know. And those are probably, phone or email are probably the two best ways.
Absolutely. Or get a hold of me, because I can get a hold of Donna as well. So, Donna, I want to thank you again so much for your time today, ma'am.
Nick, thank you too. I appreciate it, and I appreciate having the opportunity to share my thoughts with you.
Absolutely. And I want to extend that opportunity to anyone listening to this podcast. When you find it in either the newsletter or on LinkedIn, social media, wherever, to hit that like or hit that share button, because you never know who else in your network or, you know, loosely network connected to you might be looking for exactly these solutions. We don't always know who's thinking about their challenges and exactly what we talk about on these programs. So as we say, it takes a village. We appreciate our villagers for sharing this content. Thank you again to everyone for listening to Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants Monthly Internet Radio Program, which is programmed to give you all the tips and tools you need to understand how professional licensing may work and how at times the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants and their network of professionals in the healthcare industry can help you. We thank you for your time and for sharing this show with others. As I said, for more information or to talk to Donna Weinstock or Attorney Michael Favia in healthcare law, please dial area code 773-631-4580 for the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants. Again, that's 773-631-4580. Thank you all again for your time, and keep an eye out for our next program. Again, Donna, it was nice having you. You have a good day.
Thank you, you too.
All right, bye-bye now.